This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Coming up, Libertarian congressional candidate Erwin Haas. He's running in Southwest Michigan's 6th congressional district. But first, two proposals appear on the statewide ballot in Michigan this year. Both of those deal with whether wolf hunting should be allowed in the state. Gongwer News Service editor Zach Gorchow joins us.
Hi, Gordon.
Thanks for being with us. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
So this year, we only have two things on the ballot in Michigan. 2 years ago, there was a big list of issues that voters had to pick from and decide on. How did we end up with only two this year?
Well, as you mentioned, 2 years ago, we had five constitutional amendments on the ballot, plus a referendum on a statute that the legislature had passed. And those five constitutional amendments basically went down in flames. Millions, tens of millions of dollars were spent by the supporters of these initiatives, and they failed, and failed quite spectacularly, actually. So I think there was sort of a feeling that after what happened 2 years ago and the opposition so successfully pushing this sort of don't amend the Constitution or don't junk up with the Constitution with a bunch of language that, may or may not belong there, there's sort of been this residual feeling that that is not the route to go, that it's just not worth it. That it was just so unsuccessful. No one really talked about trying to do a constitutional amendment. So all we have left are the two referenda, which is a result of the legislature passing two separate statutes essentially designed to allow the hunting of wolves in Michigan. It's a little more nuanced than that, but that's the bottom line here. And the Humane Society has put in the money to challenge those laws and put them up for a public vote so that voters have the final say on whether those laws will continue or be repealed.
And just to go back for a moment to some of the other issues which could have been before voters this year, there was a proposal that which was gathering signatures for a minimum wage, but lawmakers went ahead and acted on that. And there were a couple of others as well that people thought might be able to get on the ballot, or in the case of abortion coverage, could have got on the ballot, but lawmakers went ahead and acted before the voters had a chance to weigh in on those.
Yeah, the only other one that was really, there were two that really seemed to have maybe a chance. One was the minimum wage, as you mentioned, but then, as you said, the legislature and the governor passed a minimum wage, and it essentially meant the end of that proposal. And then the other one was a constitutional amendment to make the legislature part-time. There were a lot of eyes on that in the Capitol, wanting to see if that would go anywhere, but like so many other part-time legislature proposals before it, it had no money behind it, no organization, and they did not, apparently did not come anywhere close to gathering the signatures necessary.
So if people gathered the signatures to hold a referendum on these two laws related to a wolf hunt, how did it happen that there was actually a wolf hunt last winter in northern Michigan in the Upper Peninsula?
Well, that's a complicated one. All right, so you had the first law that was passed essentially to designate wolves as a game species that could be hunted. The Humane Society moved quickly to put that up for referendum, and by doing that, it suspended the law, meaning that there would be no wolf hunting. So then the legislature, in response, passed a second law, slightly different, this one allowing the Natural Resources Commission to decide whether a species could be designated for hunting. Because the Humane Society then had to decide, and then ultimately did decide to go out and collect the signatures to put that up for referendum, while they were in the process of that, the hunting season happened. So there was no way the anti-hunting advocates could stop it. They just simply could not gather the signatures fast enough to suspend that law. So that's why there was a hunting season last year. But now that law also has been suspended and will be up for referendum. And then the really confusing part, and just shows what a mess our Constitution is when it comes to the process of a referendum, the hunting advocates around the state decided, okay, we've had enough of this. We're going to go collect signatures to put a pro-wolf hunting law, essentially the same law allowing the Natural Resources Commission to designate wolves as game, or any species as game for that matter. And they collected the signatures for that, and it went before the legislature which then voted to enact it. It's sort of a unique method under our Constitution that allows a law to be enacted if sufficient signatures are gathered and the legislature passes it. It doesn't require a gubernatorial signature. And so that law is now on the books, and through a mechanism that I don't know if we want to get into here, cannot be put up for referendum. So there will be wolf hunting in the state of Michigan, and these votes really, in the end, are meaningless.
But we should also point out, while there will eventually be wolf hunts in the state of Michigan, the Natural Resources Commission has said not this year. And again, it gets into the calendar and the timing of laws, right?
Right, right. Technically, they could have tried to do a wolf hunting season this year, but the DNR and the Natural Resources Commission determined that it just simply was going to be too rushed a scenario, that there just wasn't going to be enough time to try to put it into place. So, no, there will not be a wolf hunting season this year, but you know, come next year, there will be.
So how do we get to this point where no matter what the voters do in November, there is going to be wolf hunting next year in northern Michigan?
Well, there's a two-part answer to that. One is sort of the issue itself, which is that the pro-wolf hunting side simply decided they were not going to let the anti-hunting side win this at the ballot, similar to what happened, if you may remember, and your listeners may remember, what happened with dove hunting several years ago, that hunting advocates passed a law to allow the hunting of mourning doves, but the anti-hunting folks were able to put that up for referendum on the ballot, and voters rejected the law. And so I think there was a sense that this is what, you know, we want to do, and we have the means to do it. We're not going to, you know, it basically comes down to they were not going to let voters decide this. That I think they felt like they were envisioning a whole bunch of ads showing cute baby wolves being hunted, and that emotions would win out, and that they would lose. The other factor of this is just simply our referendum process allows for this to happen. It's, you know, basically some constitutional Swiss cheese is what you get down to it. Clearly, the founders of the Michigan Constitution wanted to put in place a process where voters could overturn something the legislature did if voters found it to be unacceptable. But the way it was written, there's all sorts of mechanisms for the legislature to circumvent this language. They can put money into the law, which then makes it immune from referendum. Just because the voters reject it doesn't mean the legislature can't go right back and pass a similar law right after that. We saw that with the emergency manager law. Voters rejected that law on the ballot in 2012, and within about a month, the legislature and Governor Snyder had passed and signed into law a very similar statute. Some changes, but the basics were still the same. So, you know, this is just the Constitution allows for this, and the pro-hunting folks decided to plow right through.
Does it get to a bigger issue, which some groups have been raising out there, about voter initiatives more or less being bypassed and people, the legislature in particular, but in this case also some interest groups trying to find ways around voter-supported initiatives?
I think you can safely say that at this point, really the only way for voters to know that they are going to change Michigan laws through a constitutional amendment. You know, we talked a little bit about the voter-initiated act where people gather signatures and submit it to the legislature. You know, we saw with the minimum wage that the legislature had found a way to essentially render such efforts moot. If you repeal the law that voters are trying to amend and then just pass it again as a new law, it appears, this hasn't been tested in court yet, but it appears that would render the ability to for voters to simply amend state statute impossible. So that leaves voters really the only way for them to know that the legislature can't meddle with a change they want to make is through a constitutional amendment. Having said that, you know, what happened 2 years ago was the Michigan Chamber of Commerce and other groups were very successful at shooting down efforts to amend the Constitution with these kind of unique, you know, one-off issues. You know, you think of amending the Constitution, you think about amending a fundamental piece of how Michigan is governed. But usually the constitutional amendments we see tend to be one specific issue. And so, you know, the opposition has been very effective at defeating these kinds of changes over the years.
So, Zach, the opponents of the Wolf Hunt, do they have any cards left to play after the vote on November 4th?
Well, there is the possibility of litigation. As they looked at the third law, the one that is in place now, as they looked at that, they saw some problems, potential problems, with the way it dealt with the previous two laws and the new one. And it gets very technical, but they certainly saw some vulnerability there. And I think should, you know, this work, you know, depending on what happens with the vote results, I think they will look at litigation to try to stop this. In fact, they may look at it regardless because, you know, even if they win and the first two laws are repealed, there will still be the third law on the books. So it's definitely a complicated situation, but that's really the last card for them to play.
So in the last few days, we have heard a little bit of noise from this campaign. Is this the first time that we have seen what we could really call any sort of active campaigning one way or another on these ballot proposals?
Yeah, I would say so. You know, up until yesterday, on Monday of this week, really, it was deadly quiet, no activity on either side. It seemed like it might just be that both sides were just sort of throwing up their hands and saying, this is irrelevant, what's the point in spending money? But yesterday, we had Kristen Bell, probably best known now as the voice of Princess Anna in the Frozen movie, also known as for playing Veronica Mars in the old TV show, came out and said, you know, Michigan voters, and she's a Huntington Woods native, so this isn't just some random thing of her stepping in, Michigan voters should vote no on these proposals, that, you know, wolves have made a great comeback in Michigan, and there's no reason to start hunting them again. So that was one little thing. And then today, on Tuesday of this week, the anti-wolf hunting people announced their first television advertisements of the campaign. Now, we don't yet know how much money is behind these ads. If they're small buys, they may really amount to, you know, not a very significant moment at all. However, the Humane Society has a lot of money. If they choose to put the money into it, they could have these ads seen by a lot of people in Michigan and a lot of voters. And I guess time will tell here, since the ads were just announced a few hours before our conversation, whether, you know, they're going to be coming to a TV set near you.
So we have a whole mix of confusing issues about ballot questions in Michigan, an issue that people may not grasp real well, and then the possibility of lawsuits getting thrown in. These are sort of all of the things that people say they don't like about the political process, right?
This is about as confusing as it could possibly get. You know, let's just, again, we'll sort of say hypothetically, what if the wolf hunting proposals get rejected by voters, like by a massive margin, you know, for whatever reason, like 70 to 30, but then wolf hunting goes forward because of the third law, and you know, think of the confusion that's going to be out there about this. You know, who knows, if it were to be rejected by an overwhelming margin, boy, you know, maybe it becomes a political liability for the legislators who voted for this. I don't really know what to expect here, because it has been an issue with so little intensity among a greater population of voters. It's hard to know what they're going to expect. You know, I think the case for wolf hunting is probably a better political case than hunting mourning doves. You know, when that was attempted a few years ago, the voters rejected that. But, you know, you'd probably look at the mourning dove as, you know, maybe a little bit more of a sympathetic species than the wolf. It's really hard to know exactly how the voters are going to handle this.
Zach Gorchow, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Zach Gorchow is the editor of the Gongra News Service. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Michigan's 6th congressional district includes the southwest corner of the state. It's currently represented by Republican Fred Upton. There are three challengers on the ballot, including Libertarian candidate Erwin Haas. Erwin Haas, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Let's begin by having you briefly tell the audience a little bit more about yourself and what you would like to do if you're elected to Congress.
Well, I'm currently a city commissioner in Kentwood, and technically I live about 8 miles outside of the 6th Congressional District, and I'd have to move if I win. I'm a libertarian because it allows me to say the truth and sort of save my soul. And I was assigned to run here in a dark, smoky room, so it's not as though I completely wanted to do this, but I will do the best job I possibly can. You ask roughly what my goals are, what my program might look like. I have the usual libertarian kinds of penumbra, cutting the IRS, cutting our attempts at having large wars in foreign countries that are none of our business, cutting the war on drugs, and making the government generally smaller. I have a separate plan, which I call the Taxpayers Defense Corporation, and this works off of the Citizens United ruling from the Supreme Court about 4 or 5 years ago. And it said basically that corporations are allowed to politic. And so what we get the impression is that corporations can go out there and lobby and elect officials to get programs set up so that the corporation makes money. And so you get something like Archer Daniels Midland Corporation pushing corn gasohol because it makes them a lot of money. But you can also envision a program, which would probably require a constitutional amendment, such that a corporation could be rewarded for getting rid of wasteful government programs and be rewarded by getting some of the saved money, some of the avoided costs. And I propose using 10% of the avoided costs for 5 years. And so a company would incorporate, raise money in the usual ways, register with the state of, I would suppose, Michigan, and then identify a wasteful program. It would then go out there and lobby legislators, advertise against the program that they're trying to get rid of, and even work to unelect officials who are not sympathetic to their cause. If the wasteful program is eliminated, they would then be entitled to getting 10% of the avoided cost each year for 5 years.
Should we be concerned at all about the idea that corporations will target what they see as wasteful programs, which may regulate their business? In other words, and that could allow them to perhaps, you know, go on and do things unfettered, and that may not necessarily be the best thing for the public.
Correct. But you see, the other side can lobby against this also. It increases the level of awareness on either side of the issue. What we've got right now is the special interest groups, be they unions, be they big corporations, or just people who are enthused about having a war on drugs, being able to put pressure on legislators out of the view of the general public, because the public really doesn't pay much attention to this stuff. And so there's this little, you know, law passed, it's a sentence in your local newspaper, and everybody kind of shrugs it off. Well, you know, it's not that big a deal that we've got gasohol. And this is all done out of view of the public. Now, if you've got the other side, you know, hey, this is wasteful, it only makes some people wealthy, it really is not helping anyone in general. If that point of view is brought out, if it's publicized, now you've got checks and balances. So not only is the one side heard, but there's an opposite point of view that's put out in the front of the public. And that's not the way it is done right now. in this country. The only thing we hear about is, you know, somebody's lobbying in the state legislators or at any other legislative level to try to get such and such a special interest kind of thing done. It's never publicized very well. And all you hear about is that, you know, you don't hear about it at all until you're suddenly paying taxes for this kind of stuff, or you're being regulated out of existence, which happens to certain industries and whatnot. So I think of it as a checks and balances, where you're suddenly able to hear the other side of the cost equation.
This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans, speaking with Erwin Haas. He is the Libertarian candidate for Congress in the 6th Congressional District, which includes the southwest corner of Michigan. You mentioned ending the war on drugs. Does this mean legalizing any drugs that we now classify as illegal?
Yes. Yes, because the war on drugs has totally failed. In 1913, when they brought in the Harrison Act, it was estimated that 1.3% of the adult population in the United States was addicted to heroin or used cocaine. The current estimate is 1.2%. We have not made much progress, and it's not worth all of the distortion of the border rules of what happens in South America and in Mexico because of the pushback from our laws, and a huge percentage, some say 20%, some say 30% of young black men in the inner city are in jail or prison, probably ensnared mostly by the war on drugs. It's totally dysfunctional. I think we just have to redo this. And the medical marijuana issue is probably the first step in, you know, that kind of a progress. I think that's just going to get more and more, that there's going to be fewer people getting enthused about having a war on drugs.
But isn't there a pretty big leap from marijuana to some of the harder drugs, cocaine and heroin? You know, there is some apparent medicinal qualities of marijuana, which people have found. There's also very little evidence in the way of someone overdosing time using marijuana, whereas we have all heard stories of people overdosing and dying from cocaine and heroin.
Right. And that's, unfortunately, that's not going to change. I think if you reduce the cost, the price in an open market for heroin or for cocaine, the price would probably drop down to roughly that of a box of salt, which is 60 cents a pound.
Would that lead to more people using heroin and cocaine?
No, it might lead to less. Because if a gram of that stuff costs you $500, it's worthwhile going to a schoolyard and recruiting young kids to become dealers, and dealers are very much like Amway distributors. The dealer is also the biggest user. In other words, the fact that somebody is out there dealing the drugs is very good evidence that they're also addicted to or have used a lot of the stuff. And so your distributor is also your biggest customer. And the distributor has to recruit new people, which means he goes to the schoolyard, he goes to his friends, he tries to get them involved in the drug business. And this is really what's keeping this whole business going. I'm very sure that if you suddenly legalized heroin or cocaine, that you would have for a few weeks or months an excess number of deaths. And after that, it would just kind of flatten out. The drugs, as they are sold, would become standardized in concentrations, and so people would know what they're buying. And most of the heroin deaths are because somebody uses a new brand which has a different concentration of the narcotic, and so they end up not breathing anymore. I'm a doctor on the side, by the way, so I deal with this kind of stuff. Yeah.
Would you support a travel ban to or from the countries which have seen an outbreak of Ebola?
I Yes, I would, knowing full well that it's going to be totally ineffective.
So why support it?
Well, because it's a popular issue and a lot of folks are now panicked about this. I do infectious diseases for a living. And my suspicion is that the epidemiologists who first pronounced Ebola as being transmitted only by what we call fomites may have borderline gotten it wrong, that it really is spread by coughing or spitting at people as during a conversation, and that it is much more contagious than we're really led to believe from the formal studies that have been published.
You mentioned at the beginning that you wanted to cut back on any large-scale military action. If you were in Congress, under what conditions would you vote to authorize the deployment of U.S. troops overseas?
Hardly any. In other words, if Canada were to invade us, I think we should probably repel these guys. But what business do we have in the Mideast? Are we protecting our oil interests? Just think about it. What else are they going to do in Saudi Arabia or in Iran or Iraq except sell their oil on the general markets?
They could sell it to someone besides the United States.
No, the markets are completely open. They don't know where the oil is going. The ships pass in the night. Names on steamers change. And so they can put their oil on a Liberian tanker, and it sails off, and they have no control over where it goes. And then there's this whole issue of we're trying to export democracy. Boy, how well has that worked? We're dealing with just a bottomless sewer right now in Syria and Iraq. We are going to bomb ISIS, right? Except we don't know where ISIS is. And so we're taking the word of somebody that we don't know to bomb somebody else that we don't know. It's a sad case of ignorant armies clashing in the night. And by the way, I'm a Vietnam veteran. I was actually in the Central Highlands for a year. So I've got the right to any blather you want to hear. I can criticize my army lots. And I am now 71 years old. Since I was born, our country has involved itself in innumerable incursions, wars, interferences with other people's government, and I haven't seen any profit yet. We haven't won very many of them. And even when we win them, what's the point? And so our army is totally, I would consider, a complete failure. They're still fighting World War II as though that were effective against guerrillas and against partisans and folks like that in foreign countries.
So do we say that a group like ISIS is only a threat to us if they are on our shores? If they behead Americans overseas, we just say that's too bad?
That's too bad. Basically, the two people who were beheaded had no business being there. You know, what good is a journalist going to do if I can turn on my YouTube station and find much better data, five new films a day coming across. And this guy's trying to report on something that he sees only through the eyes of an interpreter who wants to lead him wherever he will go. It's really not very useful. So these guys had no business over there to begin with.
Erwin Haas, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Erwin Haas is the Libertarian candidate for Congress in Michigan's 6th District. That includes the southwest corner of the state. Links with more information and longer versions of the interviews on West Southwest can be found at WMUK.org. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.